time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Man, like, there's one former assistant in Sark. Here comes another one in 2 weeks. And that's the game that, boy, this could get sideways really quick.
Russ Dellinger.
The 1,000 or so fans in the stadium stormed the field. Rushed the field at Rice. It was a sight.
And SI's Pat Forty.
I mean, they've recruited awfully well, but where are the playmakers? Where's the quarterback? Where are the playmakers? Again, they got some guys that are good, but do they have guys that are spectacular? Where are the spectacular guys?
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Invesco. QQQ. Tuck's coming.
Technically, he's going.
Yeah, that phrase means a lot now. It means a lot. Look, we're going to get to Texas. We're going to get to Coach Prime. We're going to get to Alabama. We're going to get to Miami and A&M. We're going to get to all sorts of stuff. But if you know this podcast, if you love this podcast, if you hate this podcast, whatever it is, you know that if a Big Ten football coach torches a $95 million contract, allegedly, potentially, by allegedly, shall we say, entering the transfer portal while on a phone call.
Dan.
Inappropriately with someone not his wife. In fact, someone he hires who is an expert and a victim and a survivor. I don't even know where to start, Pat. Mel Tucker, what are you doing? We had enough stuff for this podcast.
The transfer portal, really.
Hey, look, if he hadn't hit the transfer portal for Kenneth Walker IV, he wouldn't have got $95 million because he wouldn't have scored five touchdowns against Michigan. He hit the lottery, and then we have seen some dumb ways for people to wreck their career. This is a troubling way, potentially terrible way, but even if we take his side of the story and the eventual Title IX investigation and all this stuff doesn't, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Boy, was this dumb.
Oh, incredible. Yes. And you're right. Hey, you and I sat next to each other in Spartan Stadium, October 30th, 2021, watched Michigan State go 8-0 by beating Michigan in an epic game. Next day, the polls come out. They're number 3 in the country. Mm-hmm. That sets the stage for him to get that unbelievable, ridiculous, silly contract. He's on top of the world, man. I mean, he's financially set for life. He is moving to the top of his profession. He's very popular. And less than 2 years later, he's suspended without pay. And a lot of people think it would be very surprising if he ever coaches the Michigan State Spartans again. A pretty incredible comeuppance, if you will, for Mel Tucker.
Yeah. How to blow $80 million.
I don't even know where to start with this, the allegations and the investigation. Brenda Tracy was a rape survivor involving football players back in the day. She now is a highly respected lecturer and teacher, goes around and talks to football teams. But how not to do this, prevention, awareness, all the different things, right? This is a pretty well-known person in college football. She has alleged, clearly they had an inappropriate relationship. Mel Tucker's married. He's also the head football coach. He's also hiring her at times and not hiring. I don't know. There's murky parts his back. I don't want to make a judgment on what the final, what exactly it was, but clearly he admits hitting the transfer portal on a phone call. There's all sorts of admissions of things. So, we got to kind of go with there. And at this stage, as more information comes out, there's going to be a final Title IX hearing in October. the original call that was really upended the relationship. This is all from USA Today reported the story Sunday morning. April 28th, 2022 was this call. Later, she files the complaint. He's been interviewed. There's an investigation, all this stuff. March 22nd, last 2023, he responds. The investigation wraps over the summer. They're going to have a hearing. So there's all this stuff. Michigan State has sat on this quietly, hasn't said anything. Mel Tucker continued with his job until Sunday morning when USA Today's story hit. And then by Sunday morning, it hits. By 5 o'clock Sunday afternoon, they've suspended him without pay. And their statement is that they were constantly evaluating, the AD said, and based on, quote, new developments on Sunday, they decided he needed to be suspended with pay. Best I can tell, the only new development is USA Today wrote a story and all the public heard about it. And people all over the country went wild, including many people at Michigan State, both fans, alums, I'm sure students, professors, you know, the whole faculty, all that stuff. So you have all these different things going down. All right. So we can only really detail what we know at this point. And that's that there is clearly an inappropriate relationship. There's all these details that came out courtesy of USA Today. They have the full file. They spoke to Brenda Tracy, Mel Tucker. They have comments Mel Tucker made to investigators and all this stuff. But the system was, they knew there was a complaint back in December of 2022, Mel Tucker sat in March for an interview with the investigators at the school's Title IX. In June, the investigation concludes, and then they're going to have a ruling in a few weeks. It was Sunday that MSU decides that hours after the USA Today report, they decide that they should suspend Tucker without pay and promote Harlan Barnett to come in. Alan Haller, the athletic director, just said that there was new details had emerged on Sunday. They had a press conference that they declined to really provide much information at all. Clearly, the new detail was it had become public later, which, you know, led to questions of why the heck they waited so long. What did they know? Dan Murphy, ESPN, reported later on Sunday that the school, Haller and those, did not know any of the details. They knew there was a complaint and an investigation, but everything is kept very quiet in this process. They did not know the details of what had gone on. Once they found out, boom, here we have the suspension. So it's a process. It's in the dark because it's designed that way. Did Michigan State, once the word came out, did they have any other choice, Pat, than to suspend them without pay? I mean, I think that it's almost embarrassing that they weren't able to for all these months. But if you didn't know what was going on, how do you do it?
Right. Yeah. If you don't have access to the facts of the case, as it were, then you probably feel a little bit hamstrung there about what you can and can't do. And I was thinking about this even before Dan Murphy's information that came out, you know, about them really being kind of kept out of the loop of what was going on, is there is no way, if Michigan State knows that there is a Title IX investigation of the head football coach and there will be a hearing to discuss potential violation of their sexual harassment policy, that is never going to stay quiet. So it wouldn't have made sense for Michigan State to go into this thing thinking, well, if as long as it doesn't come out, nobody's going to know. That never would have made sense. So I don't believe, you know, Michigan State was trying to hide something per se. Now we get a little bit more logic, I guess, behind why they didn't do anything in the preseason or the first 2 weeks of the season, because they might not have known much until they read the USA Today story either, at which point you do have to do what they do, which is to suspend him without pay and move forward with this and, you know, see what comes out of the hearing. And the problem for Mel Tucker, I mean, even like if his side of the story is the truth, and we really don't know, But even if it is, I just don't know how you piece things back together as the coach at Michigan State after this.
Yeah, it would be pretty difficult. And, you know, he's acknowledged some things to the Title IX investigators that certainly, maybe some might say aren't fireable, but they're certainly embarrassing, and I would think it would be difficult, yeah, to run a football team. It's pretty clear how this is, you know, going to end. And it's just, we see it all the time in college sports, and we see it some in pro sports as well. It's just silly actions that cost careers and, you know, just so much money. It's amazing. Some of these decisions that are made, you know, the story, which, I think it was Jacoby. I'm missing his first name from USA Today. Kenny
Jacoby, I think.
Kenny Jacoby. Yeah.
Yep. And he's been working on this for a while. Did a great job digging into stuff. He was the one that dug into some of the stuff at LSU a couple years back and getting records and all this stuff. And I thought it was kind of interesting. Like in this case, unlike a lot of other sexual assault kind of harassment cases, you know, the victim was identified because the victim was okay, Brenda Tracy, with being identified and being written about. If she wasn't okay with that, I wonder what happened. You know, I wonder if this ever gets out and if Michigan State's administration ever learns about it, since we just, you know, learned that it's Title IX investigations are closed to his boss, you know, Tucker's bosses. So I guess it would come out in the, you know, in October, but it's wild that we're, you know, completing week two and that it comes out now. It's just, it's college football. It never ceases to amaze.
No, it really doesn't. So, you know, again, he had the big year, has not been good since. No one's really sure what to make of the Spartans this year. They're 2-0, but I haven't played anybody yet. We have Mark D'Antonio's music. Is that Mark D'Antonio's music? Coming in back as an associate. Does he end up back in the job? Did he sit there and go, wait, you're giving 9-5 to this guy? Can I get in on this? What is going to happen at Michigan? Michigan State has so much potential, and they can never get out of their own way in football. Well, when they do great. But then, yeah. And then they don't get out of their own way again.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. I also took that. The return of Mark D'Antonio was a sign they're not counting on Mel Tucker coming back. Because maybe Mark D'Antonio is so all fired bored that the idea of coming just to coach three games sounds great. And then, yeah, if Mel's back, all right, I'll leave again. Now, I think Mark D'Antonio's like, he's not coming in unless he thinks he's here for the season. Alan Haller said he will be wearing a headset, which means he will be involved in what's going on in terms of in-game decisions. And Mel Tucker certainly isn't going to be like, yeah, bring back the most popular head coach of the last 40 years, and then when I come back, it'll be fine. So that tells me that that they're not planning on having Mel back.
Yeah. I don't know. It's nuts. Crime and punishment in the state of Michigan. Jim Harbaugh served his second game suspension for not a cheeseburger. They have good times in Michigan with these suspensions. They're certainly eventful. I'll give him that. He served his second game. You see, he worked the chain gang at his son's youth football. Yeah. Harbaugh was on the chain gang.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tremendous.
Yeah.
it's a guy, you know, you mow the lawn, you work the first down marker, you know, just man of the people.
Remember he cleared that tree that fell? Like, he's just a guy around town. He's just the guy around town. I don't know.
I will say, too, though, I mean, it's been a hell of a summer / early season for the Big Ten between LaFleur de Harbaugh, the Mel Tucker, and Northwestern. Good gravy, people.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just,
yeah. What if I would have told you in May that 2 weeks into the 2023 season, the upcoming season, that Michigan State would have an interim coach and Northwestern would have an interim coach.
Well, how about by September 16th, Saturday to September 16th, neither Jim Harbaugh, Mel Tucker, or
Pat Fitzgerald.
I'm sorry. It's too many guys. Pat Fitzgerald will be coaching.
Yeah.
I mean, no one will coach that day. Yeah. You're like, wait, what the heck? What the hell is going on? They like to make fun of the SEC for being wild.
Exactly.
But we got everything here. We got cheeseburgers. We got transfer portals. We got hazing. We got it all. I don't know. We'll see what these details come. It could be a lot worse for Mel Tucker. I don't want to make too much light of it. It's just whatever you never should have been in that situation. Never should have been in that situation. Don't harass anyone. But don't. I mean, it's the whole thing's just crazy. All right. Let's get to something else. You want some harassment? Texas Sark harassing his old boss.
Whoa. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to some football. Texas Longhorns walk into Tuscaloosa and win handily. Just win. Quinn Ewers, 24-38, 349 yards, 3 touchdowns, 5 receivers caught at least 3 passes. He never got sacked. The defense sacked, delivered 5 sacks. Let's start with the Texas part of this. Ross, I'll start with you. Thoughts on the Longhorns? You know, the old Texas is back. I think they're back when they're really back, but this is certainly it's a hell of a step.
Yeah. It was incredible. And you're right. It wasn't some kind of fluke or anything like that, right? I mean, they really dominated the game. And they, at the end of the game, and I'm going to steal this from Michael Casagrande, who's a longtime beat writer there at Alabama. He kind of wrote a column from the game, and it's about how they grinded out, you know, late in the game. Texas just grinded out the win. He wrote, the locals sat in stunned silence as Texas slowly grinded Alabama into submission on a night that felt unlike any other in the Saban era. And it felt that way on TV. It was the biggest home loss for Nick Saban, even going all the way back to his LSU days, when Ron Zook in Florida beat him in 2003 when they ended up winning the national championship that year. But it was the biggest home loss since that game. And it felt like it. It felt like just a dominating performance. Texas had an answer for anything that Alabama did. Sometimes an explosive answer, or sometimes one of, you know, 6-8 play, 70-yard drive. You know, Ewers looked incredible. His receivers, although they dropped some passes, that's the whole thing. They blew out Alabama, and they dropped like 3 touchdown passes and probably 2 more during the game. And you know, Sark, obviously, you could see, and we're going to talk about one of the plays later, but, you know, he drew up some good stuff against his old boss. It was impressive from beginning to end. It was a dominant, kind of shocking performance, and it gives more credence to Pat's take that it's dead. The dynasty is dead.
Yep. We'll get to that here in a minute. I know we're talking Texas here first, but look, I mean, Dan and I think both said, when we were picking the game, that, I mean, or maybe it was the Wednesday pod, that, you know, if you're Texas, coming close is no longer good enough. You got to go win this game. And then they did, and they backed it up. I mean, that was very impressive to not just win, but to basically take it to Alabama and take it from Alabama. They were the better team. They were good in the clutch. They made mistakes. They overcame mistakes. To run out the clock by punching out first downs when they had to have them, and then getting a key offside penalty, which is hallmark of the no longer the same Alabama. But again, we'll get to that. I was really impressed with what Steve Sarkisian did, and he needed this as much as the program did. I think Sark, to elevate himself to somebody who deserved the Texas job when you're going into the SEC, and to go from being a good coach to the next level. This is a nice step towards getting there.
Big one, because I was literally watching on ESPN. They had the Alabama logo, the Texas logo, and it said Sark under Texas. the Longhorn, and then it had Saban under the A, and it's Sark versus Saban. And I was like, wow, that's a, in boxing, that's what you, you know, there's an A side and a B side is like this, right? There's Floyd Mayweather and then the bummies fighting. Sark would have been the B side on that, but you win all of a sudden, right? Like that's a nice little bit. They had better players. They had a better scheme. They were more aggressive. They had better execution. They were just flat out better. And there was nothing fluky about it. This was not Alabama played like you'd say, well, boy, if they hadn't, you know, these three terrible things happened or whatever. I mean, even when Clemson lost to Duke and that was pretty sad, like Clemson could still be like, well, look what happened, right? Well, it just wasn't there. All right. You've said they're not going to win another national title under Saban. This team doesn't look like it's going to do it. I guess I don't know. There was no snap of the finger here that I'm going to sit there. Jalen Milroe, he's all right. He's good, but he and what they had.
Some good plays, some bad plays. Not enough good plays.
I mean, again, no sacks. Alabama's defensive line couldn't get home. You know, they just weren't getting it done. What do you think, Pat? Is this your thoughts on Bama?
Yes, I double down on my assertion that has been my assertion since early last season or midseason, I would say. Really, after they played Texas and Texas A&M and they won both those games, I still was way down. I just didn't think they played well, didn't look like Alabama. And then they turned around, they lost to Tennessee, lost to LSU, don't win the SEC West, not part of the playoff. This year's team looks like more of the same. And one of the statistics I will point to, turnover margin, always used to be the kings of takeaways. Zero turnovers forced from Texas. Same as the zero they forced against LSU, the zero against Vanderbilt, zero against Texas last year, zero against Utah State. They only had 14 takeaways last year, which was the lowest, I think, maybe in the entire Saban era. You're not making good play, big plays on defense. Then you're screwing up and you're committing penalties, too many penalties, too many key mistakes. And if you've got Devontae Smith and Najee Harris and those guys, you can overcome a lot of things. They don't. I mean, they've recruited awfully well, but where are the playmakers? Where's the quarterback? Where are the playmakers? Again, they got some guys that are good. But do they have guys that are spectacular? Where are the spectacular guys? Where are the Alabama players that you watch and you're like, oh my gosh, that guy's, you know, unstoppable. The running backs, they keep recruiting these great running backs. They don't do much. You know, they're just kind of guys. So I for whatever reason, there's just a confluence of things coming together here for Alabama that are not up to the championship standard that they set for themselves.
Yeah, you know, through the evolution of Alabama's teams under Nick Saban, if you go back, you know, his first 5 to 7 years, they won a certain way, right? They played great physical defense, dominated up front on the defensive lines and defensive front specifically, and kind of won games the old school way and were very disciplined, right? And like Pat said, created turnovers on defense. And then they evolved, you know, right around the time of Lane Kiffin getting there. Into more of a spread, and then they won in a different way. Really, the last 6 to 7 years, they've won with offensive explosion, skilled players, and you know, incredible quarterback play. But they were always still pretty disciplined. They always still created turnovers, and maybe they weren't the best up front that you know that they had the teams of the 2010s and 2015s or so, but they still had it, and that seems those two things, the discipline and the physicality and talent up front, those are the things that seem to be going away. And then you factor that in with pretty young skill players and maybe inefficient and indecisive, especially a quarterback, and you have this recipe, right? 10 penalties, 90 yards at home. A few of those were false starts in your own place. You know, sacked 5 times. I mean, just Texas's front got incredible pressure. And then Milroe, I think that he seemed somewhat indecisive. Part of it was probably he was scared of getting sacked because of the pressure. And look, Alabama, I think, knew probably entering this season there was an issue at quarterback, and they signed Buckner from Notre Dame, but that they were after several others, and it's pretty obvious now, been made pretty public, they were after Van Dyke at Miami to try to transfer in. So they knew there were some issues, and we kind of saw it all.
You remember, I just go back to that playoff game against Notre Dame they had in the semifinals, and I think it was 2021 playoff or 20. Was it 2020 season? And then that, whatever yeah. It was, they play Notre Dame. They crush Notre Dame. And one of the plays in the game, they hand the ball off to Najee Harris. It's a pretty simple play. And he bumps off a tackler, then gets wide and hurdles a Notre Dame kid. He's 6'1", 230 pounds. And he hurdles him and runs for 51 yards. And it's like, this is no longer about scheme. Like, you can be like, these guys are great coaches, the schemes. Like, you just got a guy who can break one tackle, then hurdle a guy. There's no answer to that. And they don't have that guy now. And so, I don't know. 2 weeks from now, Ole Miss shows up. And Ole Miss looked pretty good. Look really good. They beat a very good Tulane team at Tulane and battled and showed a lot. And, man, like, there's one former assistant in Sark. Here comes another one in 2 weeks. And that's the game that, boy, this could get sideways really quick. Because the margin for error is small. Now, the SEC is not looking great. They're 3-6 against power teams. LSU's lost ugly. South Carolina's lost ugly. Florida's lost ugly. We'll talk about Texas A&M losing ugly. Maybe it's not as hard as it's going to look, but that game in 2 weeks is a really big game for Nick Saban and where Alabama is as a program.
I think they're all big. Every Power 5 game from now on is a big game for them. And
you might be right. I mean, they got to go to Mississippi State following, and I don't know, maybe the Aggies are good again. Razorbacks, Tennessee, they still got LSU. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, but it's almost unfathomable to be like, hey, this is going to be a 4-5 loss Alabama. Like that almost just seems impossible to say. Well, you watch that game against Texas. You have Texas comes in, beat you by double digits, and kneels out the clock, and you never really stood a chance. That looks like a team that could lose 4 or 5 games. I don't know. We're going to have to see. All right, Coach Prime, unbelievable, right? 36-14 over Nebraska. This was not close. Halftime, he comes to the halftime thing, says we should be leading by more. Shedeur Sanders, another huge day. He is now 69 of 89 for the season with 903 passing yards, 6 TDs, 0 interceptions. The defense was really good in this one. It was a shootout against TCU, not so much against Nebraska. 3 fumbles, a pick. Travis Hunter, 125 plays on this Saturday. 3 catches for 73, 4 solo tackles, a pass breakup. Incredible. Pat, you were there. What was the party like in Boulder?
It was a blast. I mean, it was so fun. And you guys know this. I mean, like, the TCU fans know from last year. The Cincinnati fans know from the year before. When all of a sudden something incredibly special happens at your school and you don't necessarily see it coming, and all of a sudden just that excitement, the contagiousness of it just spreads around campus and around your fan base. And I mean, the atmosphere was, the game was at 10 a.m., a 10 a.m. kickoff. You usually get a sleepy student section, 10 a.m.? Oh, no. They were in there before 9, and they were howling and roaring the whole time. Coach Prime came out and just walked the stadium. This is two different eras here, okay? Saban, before every game, goes out and walks across the field in his coat and tie. Prime's out there in his white Coach Prime hoodie, pulled up over his head, sunglasses on, his sweatpants tucked into his white socks, and he's walking around. But the students are like roaring, like at the sight of this deity out there at Folsom Field. It was really great for a place that has had absolutely very little interest in college football in recent years. So the excitement level was incredible. The game, again, the performance. And it was up and down, a little bit uneven. Their offense was not as good as it was last week. But when they needed big plays, they hit big plays. As the game went on, they kind of broke down the North Nebraska defense, which was really good. Nebraska tackled great. They didn't miss any tackles the whole game. But they just broke them down because they got so many good playmakers, and Shedeur Sanders can deliver the football. Boy, does he throw a nice ball. And then I went down to the sideline, 5 minutes left, and it was, you know, the fans are going crazy. But then on the sidelines, like, oh, there's Michael Irvin. Hey, wait a minute. His alma mater's Miami. They're playing this huge game. It doesn't matter. He's from Prime University now. So he's there rooting for Prime. Jordan Bajant, the Fox Sports vice president, comes down with just this huge smile on his face because they've hit the lottery on Colorado the last 2 weeks. Rick George, the AD, is like hugging everybody, high-fiving everybody. And then here come the students and here come the fans. And I ended up with some woman who was about 40 years old out there next to me. She's taking video of the scene. And she looks at me and she goes, what are we doing out here? And it's just like, hey, man, this is the party. Ride the wave, enjoy it. So it was great.
Yeah, it looked amazing on TV. And, you know, after the TCU game, there was quite a bit of talk of, and I thought this myself, of the, you know, the defense is the weak spot, right, for Colorado. And it still might be, but certainly they played really well. And I don't know really how good offensively that Nebraska is going to be. I have certainly questions there, but you got to give it to defensively. Colorado's unit really kind of really stepped up and forced Nebraska in some tough spots. And it was good to see because you got to be a little, you know, got to be well-rounded. I think they were, second or third and fourth on third and fourth downs. Nebraska was 4 of 15 on third and fourth downs, only had 341 total yards. Yeah, just really impressive. And maybe this is more of a complete team than we first thought.
Yeah, I mean, total domination, total wild scene through the TV. Prime's, how about Prime's bodyguards? Got a T-shirt that says F around and find out.
Yeah, that's great. And the 90-year-old woman dancing on the table in the locker room with Prime.
Yeah, the old
and,
lady fan.
Rick George.
He found the old fan. She was
Peggy.
At the pregame game. Yeah.
She had the line of the day. She was getting off the table. She was dancing up there and says, where's my theme music? which is Prime's line. That was great.
It's the month of Prime. Okay, they got Colorado State coming next week, 10 p.m. ESPN. It's going to do a huge number. At Oregon, and then USC on the 30th. How about that for, like, we talked before the season, like, they could be very good and be, like, 1-4 at the end of at the end of September. And we still feel pretty good about them. They also could, I don't know. When they look great. They look absolutely great. They're still in a rank. Problem with the Pac-12, 8 ranked teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
8 ranked teams this week. If this season had been 2 years ago, this game will do 7-8 million. We haven't got the ratings yet, I don't think, the final ratings. The Pac-12 is unreal.
Yeah.
If only we could put these teams together in one conference and sell the television package.
I know.
It is incredible that a 100-year-old league is going to die because 2 years too late, they got great.
Yeah, it's like astounding. The bad timing, bad luck, bad leadership, bad vision, you know, it all comes together. And this is the too little too late season, but boy, they're good. They are really, really good. The quarterbacks in the league, skill position guys, coaching, everything.
Absolute nuts. Absolutely nuts. All right.
Yeah, they were, 18-0 when non-conference
started. 18-0.
18-0.
Ain't quite there yet. Arizona State lost. Arizona lost. But they both put up good fights. Washington State beats Wisconsin soundly.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a great scene. You know, they're Jack Dickert, their coach, is saying, you know, this is the moment. It's everything. We belong in the Power Five, and you know, they're begging it. Both the Pac-2, the two pack, they're both 2-0. Yeah, it's the Pac-12 is absolutely rolling. It's got the most exciting players. It's got the most exciting coaches. Everything's going, and it's like, yeah, we're killing you now. This is college football. This is college football. It's fun. All right, we'll be back after this message. Other huge game. Well, there's a bunch of huge games this week. I don't want to give it just one or another, but huge game down in South Florida. Miami Hurricanes just rip through the A&M defense. 48-33. Tyler Van Dyke with five touchdowns. Huge plays. Bradshaw Smith with 98-yard kickoff return. So many skill players. Just A&M could not do anything to stop this onslaught. Huge momentum win for Mario Cristobal. Ugly loss for Jimbo Fisher. He's 5 years into this. He's coming off a 5-7, and they really got smoked by a Miami team that, if A&M is doing what A&M should do, should be able to beat. Just thoughts either way. You can pick either side or both on this game, Pat.
Yeah. Well, I'll start with the Aggies because
we love negativity.
We do. And once again, much expected, not much being delivered. Lose by 15 down there. Texas A&M now last in the SEC in scoring defense, 29 points per game. Second last LSU, which got rolled by Florida State. Third last South Carolina, which gave up a bunch to North Carolina. 10th Alabama, which gave up 34 to Texas. Is there a theme here? Yeah, the SEC, which is not very good, is especially not very good at defense in a lot of places, which is a real departure from traditional SEC play. But that's the way it is. I mean, we got teams out there that are not stopping anybody. So SEC teams that have gone on the road or even in your home building, in the case of Alabama, and played Power 5 opposition, guess what? You've either lost or you've been in a dogfight, and most of you have given up quite a few points along the way. There are a lot of problems in that league, but A&M probably once again right now the biggest underachiever, I would say.
Yeah, the SEC is, I believe, 3-6 in non-conference Power 5 games this season. You know, Utah beat Florida. Tennessee got a win over Virginia. Florida State beat LSU, North Carolina, South Carolina. And then you got Miami, A&M, Texas, Bama. So, yeah, it's been surprising, right? It's probably the SEC's worst opening weekend since at least, I think, 2017. I think the ACC is 4-1 against the SEC already. And I think that's as many wins against the SEC that the ACC has had in a already, but in a full season since 2017. So pretty crazy. Something I didn't expect going in. You know, would really shine for me. Van Dyke certainly did. Miami quarterback Tyler Van Dyke, as you mentioned, Dan, 375 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. But Xavier Restrepo, the receiver from Miami, made some incredible plays. And we all knew, you know, he was hurt last year a lot, and they may have played with him for most of last season. And he's really talented, and he had six catches for 126 yards, you know, averaging 21 yards a reception. So he was impressive. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know if this was 2-6-6 or 7-5 teams playing. It's one of those things. Or is this one team, you know, is it contender for their conference title? I don't know what to make of it yet. You know, time will tell, but I thought Miami would win the game. I didn't think that they would in the end dominate so much and just carve up the Aggies. And now, you know, the pressure is on, right? We talked about how over the offseason there was a lot of, you know, stuff emanating from that Aggie facility, that things were going well with Petrino and with Jimbo Fisher and all that. And now when you're down and you're 1-1 and you got the schedule that they do, man, it that's going to get interesting down there.
It's interesting in the SEC. You go in the season thinking, all right, who's going to contend for a national title? Who's going to be in? There are now, we just talked about Saban's huge game against Ole Miss. And it's not like Nick Saban's going to get fired. Obviously, he's not. But that's a pressure game. Jimbo Fisher's got pressure games. Brian Kelly's got pressure. Like, who's going to have that season that goes off the rails? One of those three is probably Will.
Yeah.
We already seen Billy Napier. He's going to have pressure games. Like, there is a lot of pressure, and you want that. You're on Broadway. You're getting paid the big money, the big expectations. You can't have these seasons. And somebody in that mix, probably a couple of them, are going to have really, really bad seasons. So it's like the opposite of the Pac-12. Everyone's flying high. You know, obviously, we're not talking a lot about, like, Georgia because they aren't playing anybody yet. But that's sort of the sort of spot where we're at.
Real quick. I will say this, and this will be interesting to watch. Pollsters, playoff committee selection members, they better remember what the SEC did and didn't do in the non-conference. Because when we start getting into conference play and they're like, oh, well, you're giving credit because, well, you know, I mean, somebody beat LSU. Well, did they beat him as bad as Florida State did?
Right.
Well, so, you know, somebody beat Alabama. Did beat him as bad as Texas did? Don't give the SEC the automatic quality of opposition bump that they usually get and usually earn, usually deserve. But given the non-conference performance, there's nothing to say necessarily that playing in the SEC is tougher than in other leagues this year.
All right. Huge. I think a very big victory for Notre Dame. They go down to NC State. NC State has got this game circled. It is home. There is a huge weather delay. I think NC State will probably be a pretty good team. They didn't have enough food. Like, Sam Hartman's eating hot dogs and brats from the Carter Finley, like, concession stands during this weather break. He only completes, I think, 14 passes, but four of them are for touchdowns. They line up and just run the ball down NC State's throats, 45-24, quickly on the Irish. Impressive. They're going to walk into that Ohio State game. This is as good as I've seen Notre Dame look in a while. Let's just put it that way. Probably since 2020.
Yeah, they look like a complete team. They're good on offense. They're good on defense. They can run. They can throw. They absolutely have their best quarterback in quite a while. Sam Hartman now is second nationally in pass efficiency to only Caleb Williams. Has put up great numbers. Looks great. And so, they've got Central Michigan, but then the Ohio State game now is setting up to not just be a big one, but one that Notre Dame isn't going to go in, I don't think, just wishing and hoping they're going to keep it close.
Yeah, really, really impressed with Sam Hartman. It's amazing what a new transfer portal quarterback will do to your team, right? It's incredible. We saw the Irish struggle so much last year at that position, and now, bam, they're just back, it's the portal era that we're in. And defensively, like you guys said, they look solid too. 2 weeks, yeah, big game in 2 weeks. We'll know a lot about the Irish when the Buckeyes come.
We'll start looking forward to next week, later in this week, but nothing's going on next week. Two weeks. A lot of things are happening. Right. Yes, those aren't good.
Yes.
The Brian Ferentz points watch update. He needs seven victories for Iowa, 25 points per game contractually, or his contract ends. Look, if they keep winning, it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get fired or whatever, but we kind of want to make it that way. The Iowa did win. They are now 2-0. Actually, I think we talked about throwing them in a volcano. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Brian.
Yeah,
you
did.
They don't have any volcanoes. And although I didn't know they had a lake in Iowa, and they do.
Yeah,
so maybe they do have a volcano hidden around there somewhere.
Somewhere.
You don't know. You don't know what's going on. Somewhere just south of Ottumwa, there is this volcano. Someone's going to call me and be like, don't you know anything? All right. Yeah. They won. They beat the Cyclones in the Cy-Hawk battle, which needs a better name. There's so much to talk about with Iowa. Anyway, 2013, so they got 20 points, but he should be thanking Sebastian Castro, who had a 30-yard interception. So he gets credit for the defensive play. He's behind. They had 24 the first week, 20. They now needs 25.5 per game the rest of the way to make up for the early deficiencies. Not looking good, so 2 weeks in. not so good for Brian Ferentz. Unless you got a good line, we don't have to discuss this every time. We don't have to bring this.
we're renaming the game from the Cy-Hawk to the All Bets Are Off game.
Oh, all yeah. Don't do that. Yeah, don't do that. Yeah. Iowa State, it's a rest. I mean, it's a mess. It's just a mess. You people are crazy. All right. All of that just going on. All right. It's time to move on to our most innovative play of the weekend, courtesy of Invesco QQQ. Ross, which team was leading the way this Saturday?
Well, it's the Longhorns. So it's the big game of the week is where our play is going to come in. It is late in the game. It's about midway through the fourth quarter. Texas is nursing a 27-24 lead. It's got the ball with, I believe, a long second down. If this is a pass play, it's a touchdown, 39-yard touchdown. Quinn Ewers to A.D. Mitchell. And basically what we have here is just a great read by Quinn Ewers. He spotlights the safety who drifts away from A.D. Mitchell, which leaves him one-on-one coverage. And guess what? A.D. Mitchell blows by his cornerback, makes a great move about 10 yards down the field. He fakes an out route, and then, boom, runs for basically a nine route, a go route down the field, and it's wide open for what really was like the icing of the game, just kind of sealed the victory.
It was an impressive play call. It was part of an entire game plan that was terrific. Aggressive on fourth down, aggressive in play calling, aggressive in trying to force that secondary to do things they didn't want to do. They found the weaknesses in the Alabama defense and really did the whole thing very, very well. So there you have it.
They got a first down on a butt fumble, too.
They did?
Yeah.
Wasn't a fault. We never got the ball. That was very good.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bizarre play.
Great play. Great job by Kirk Herbstreit on that call, getting that immediately.
Yeah, right.
He saw that. Figured out the play, had the right call. The refs had it wrong. They got it right, all that. So there you have it. That was our most innovative play of the weekend. Thanks again to Invesco QQQ. Okay. Most people hand out the Heisman at the end of the season. We like to hand it out as we go. It's called the Small Sample Heisman. It's a popular little segment we have here. Pat, do you have someone who could win the Small Sample Heisman this week?
I do. You know, look, I'm the Coach Prime chronicler here. I was there for their game, and so I'm sticking with the Buffaloes. I gave the Small Sample Heisman last week to Travis Hunter. I'm giving it to his teammate this week, Shedeur Sanders, who was excellent. He got beaten up. He got harassed a little bit more, sacked a few times, chased around. But, boy, he was good. Keeping his wits about him, moving around the pocket, and he lit up a good Nebraska defense. 393 yards passing, two touchdowns. He ran for a touchdown as well. Maybe his best play ended up not counting, where he ducks and dodges and escapes tackles, and he's about out of bounds and fires a two-point conversion pass that apparently was low. It trapped off the ground, so it didn't count, but they called it good, and Shedeur rips off his helmet, which is an automatic penalty, and gets flagged for that. And his dad yells at him when he comes over. He goes, "You cannot take off your helmet. You cannot do this." And he said, "Dad, this is personal." Because that was Deion's thing the whole week, was trying to make the Nebraska game personal, because it used to be for the Colorado fans. So that was his son basically throwing his own words back at him. It's personal. So anyway, Shedeur Sanders is off to a ridiculous start in his first season as an FBS player. He's my Small Sample Heisman.
There you go. Ross, you got
Kansas Jayhawks played, I think they played on Friday night, played yeah. Illinois, won the game. They're 2-0. They continue to roll. Jalen Daniels came back at quarterback, but my small sample goes to the running back. Devin Neal continues to impress. He had against Illinois, who was last year a pretty dang good defensive team. 120 yards, 10 carries. He had a long of 43 and a touchdown. Just an impressive, just ran all over the Illini. And now, you know, for the season, he started the year with a 94-yard performance against Missouri State, scored a touchdown in that game. So give it up for Devin Neal. Hey, guys, the Jayhawks look for real again.
Yeah.
Yeah, not too bad. All right, I'm going to give mine to Cameron Ward, quarterback at Washington State. There's a lot of great quarterbacks in the Pac-12. Cameron Ward is not the one getting all the hype. He's not on the commercials. He's not this or that. Doesn't matter. Huge victory against Wisconsin, 20-32, 212 yards passing with two touchdowns. He also ran 17 times for 43 yards, including some backbreakers at a 23-yarder. It's terrific performance holding it together as Washington State delivers a huge upset and a real setback to Wisconsin. Great, great game from Cameron Ward and the and really all of the Cougars. Kind of a team Heisman, but as we mentioned earlier, they're fighting. They are where they are. This is their last shot at Power Five football. So far, so good. I mean, the Big Ten, the former Alliance member, destroyed them, destroyed their league. Yeah. And, yeah, you know, Wisconsin will go on cashing checks, but Wazoo got the victory there, so at least you got that. All right, can you say something nice? Said plenty of mean things, as we normally do on this podcast. Pat, I'll start with you. Can you say something nice? Can we try?
I can. You know what? It's not even fake nice like last week about Michigan. I'm going to say something for real nice. Okay. About the Cincinnati Bearcats. Whoa. They're going into the Big 12, and everybody thinks they may finish last because Luke Fickell's gone. They had a bunch of players transfer out. Scott Satterfield didn't feel like that great a hire. Look at them now. They're 2-0, and they just thumped Pittsburgh on the road. Pitt, which has kind of established itself as a pretty year-in, year-out good team. Bearcats go in there and win 27-21, and they were up, I think, 27-7, and Pittsburgh scored a couple late. But a lot of guys doing good things for them, but I want to shine a little light on Corey Kiner, former LSU running back who transferred there. And last year, he didn't do a lot, but this year now, Satterfield has kind of made him the centerpiece back. He had 20 carries, 153 yards, and a touchdown against the Panthers. He's had two 100-yard games, and I say, watch out for the Bearcats, specifically on September 20. I've got the wrong year here. Hang on. September 23rd, which is, boy, that's turned out to be a bonkers day, yeah, when they host Oklahoma in their first ever Big 12 Big 12 conference game.
Not bad. Ross, say something nice.
I want to say something nice about a food. Rice. Rice.
Good one.
Rice takes down Houston in overtime, jumped out to 28-0 lead midway through the second quarter, didn't score again in regulation, went to overtime 28-all, and then won in double overtime. I believe they stopped Houston on a two-point conversion when you have to go for two in overtime. The 1,000 or so fans in the stadium stormed the field, rushed the field at Rice. It was a sight. And they burned couches on the streets in Houston. Not really, but there you go, Rice.
There you go, Rice. All right, you know how nice I am today? I know I started maybe a little mean with a couple of those lines about Mel. I admit it. I'm going to say something nice about two people. One, I'm going to say something nice about one of our favorite college football players, UCF kicker Colton Boomer.
Oh, yeah.
First off, incredible last name for a kicker, Colton Boomer. He's now at UCF. If you recall, he came to our attention with his high school yearbook quote, which was kicking bombs and kissing your moms. That was his high school yearbook quote. Absolutely fantastic. A lot of awkward conversations around the grad parties with people and their moms. Why did Colton say that? He dropped a 55-yarder and then a walk-off 40-yarder. UCF beat Boise State 18-16. So Colton Boomer is not just a mom-kissing, yearbook-quoting kind of guy. He can also deliver the kicking bombs. But I'm going to really say something nice about the Akron Zips. They defeated Morgan State, which, you know, really isn't normally something that we're going to get that excited about. They were losing going into the last play, and then they were able to, or the last minute, they were able to force a, let me get this right, the details of this play. They were able to, Zips defensive lineman C.J. Nunnally, the fourth, forced a fumble on the Morgan State 15-yard line, and then linebacker Brian McCoy scooped it up, ran it 13 yards in for the game-winning touchdown with 52 seconds left in the fourth quarter. So Akron avoids the absolute disaster of losing to Morgan State. But that isn't it. During the game, and in this play in particular, they started their turnover, their newest turnover tradition. We've seen the throne. We've seen the chain. It's the turnover tire. They put a tire. Yes, a car tire. Akron is the tire capital. Goodyear's there. Yeah, the Goodyear blimp. It used to be called Rubber City, the Rubber Bowl, I think they played in. They are the tire people. And apparently all over Akron, there's just tires laying around. So including InfoCision Stadium, I guess. They took a tire and they put that around whoever gets the turnover as like a necklace. The turnover tire. This is true. Look up the video. Of all the turnover things you could come up with, this is the best one I've ever heard. You get a tire around your neck. A huge...
Oh my gosh.
Leave it up to the Zips.
That's you know what? That is on brand for where you live and probably who is helping pay for your athletic department and your university.
Peak Maction. Peak Maction.
Yep. Yeah, that is my peak Maction.
So back in the day, Akron did the turnover pencil. they had this huge pencil. And I don't understand what that was, but they nearly poked the dude's eye out with the pencil because he was. So they got rid of the turnover pencil. Now they're going with the turnover tire. Akron Zips. Fantastic idea.
Was it the pencil because they're so studious? They want you to be, you know, thinking number two pencil for your exams?
I don't know. I think that Ticonderoga Pencil Company, which is most of the pencils, that's in like Orlando.
Right, that's Lee Corso's thing. So
yes, Corso, and I don't know what the pencil. There's only so much research you're going to do. There wasn't a lot. Needless to say, Akron Zip coverage, not a lot of it out there. Not a lot of it out there. We could use more. I'm asking the Beacon Journal, what is the tire story, the turnover tire? But I don't know. But listen, whoever thought, let's just throw a tire around a guy's head.
I'm looking at the photos. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's like a real tire. Like the thing
it's a real tire.
You know what? I know this. Our listeners will come through for us. They'll have the info on this. On that and the pencil.
Ongoing. What do you do in Akron? I don't know, but I love it. I don't know. Peak Maction. Like, hey, anyone? Oh yeah, we got some tires that are stuffed in the corner.
Is it a Goodyear tire? Is it a Firestone tire?
I don't know what tire it is. We got so much to find out. But
it looks like a tire without the pictures show a tire that is.
It looks
doesn't
like
have any
worn
labels
down
on it at all.
Yeah, it looks like a crappy tire. I'll be honest with you, but that part of it too, like beaten down. We're Akron. They're the Zips, man.
Is Joe Moorhead still the coach there? Is he?
Yeah, Joe Moorhead.
Okay. Maybe this is like the spare from Joe's like comp car that he gets, you know, for being the Zips coach.
I think they just got tires piled up around there. The whole economy is tires and LeBron James. That's the Akron economy. I don't know. Good job, Akron. Love you. Love the tire. Turnover tire is the best thing. We don't need any fancy throne. This is blue collar to a T.
Give me a tire.
Give me a tire. Let's put it on a guy's head. All right, that's our show. We covered a lot of ground. We didn't get to everything. We got plenty to talk about this week. We'll be back some point like Tuesday night, certainly for your Wednesday morning, and we'll have Race to the Case later. Lots of good stuff. We appreciate everyone listening. Continue to subscribe. Tell your friends about us, and we will talk to you later.